with 10 to 10. And we're up to chapter 87. 87 is called Prayers of the Personified Vedas. Very good. And tonight we'll finish the chapter. So we'll go for verses 32 to 50. We'll hear about the remaining prayers for the Personified Vedas. So what is the context of the chapter? Who is speaking? Yeah, the personified Veda. So it says that they personify to glorify Krishna. Everything in Vedic culture is personified. Nothing is impersonal. Right? Everything has personality. So even the Shastras, the various Shastras, there is a personality for each book. So the 28 principal Upanishads have manifested there, and they are offering prayers. What are the prayers they are offering? Very deep prayers.
So
each prayer from each of the 28 principal Upanishads is like the essence of the entire Upanishad. So it gives us like a, these are essential instructions that we need to embody if we want to go back to Krishna. Hands up if you want to go back to Krishna. Okay. Then you need to embody these prayers.
Since so, there are four Vedas.
Four Vedas.
There are 28 Upanishads.
No, it's 108 Upanishads. These are the 28 principal Upanishads.
Yeah. So it means they are the personified Vedas, right? So does it mean that they are, each is talking about seven Upanishads?
About what?
See, there are...
Yeah, I know all that, but what was the last thing you said?
You said, does it mean that one Veda are talking about seven Upanishads?
No, no, they're speaking about, they're the 28 principal Upanishads. Yeah. So they're speaking about their own Upanishads.
Oh, so they are talking about themselves.
Yeah, they're representing themselves because they're personified. Yeah. Okay.
Perhaps some of the...
What are the names? Ishopanishad? Then there's Svetasutta Upanishad, Mandaka Upanishad, Katha Upanishad. Oh yeah, Gita Upanishad, it's not really one of them. So as we read through, it quotes from various Upanishads. So as you read the purports, you can see the names of several of them. Or you could search on Google and find them all. Okay, text 32. The wise souls who understand how your Maya deludes all human beings render potent, loving service to you, who are the source of liberation from birth and death. How indeed can fear of material life affect your faithful servants? On the other hand, your furrowing eyebrows, the triple-rimmed wheel of time, repeatedly terrify those who refuse to take shelter of you. So we'll read the first paragraph. Chinesh, I'll let you read it.
Vedas believe their most cherished devotions of personality to those who are tired of material illusion, which is based on false sense of independence from the world. The Vajasri means wisdom of the white Yajurvedas contains the following mantras. After passing beyond all the species of life, all the planetary system, and all the limits of space in all directions, one approaches the personal original soul of immortality. Then one receives the opportunity to enter permanently into his domain and worship him with personal service.
Thank you. What are the points?
They are emphasizing that we must perform devotional service.
Very good. Very good. Anything else?
We must go through all the cycle of suffering and then take the first way before he elevates himself to the higher level.
Good. Any other points?
And they can perform the devotional service only if they are detached from this material world. They are there.
Good. So the Vedas speak of three subject matters. What are the three subjects of the Vedas? Sambandha, Abhideya,
and
Prayojana Gyan. Three types of Sambandha means the relationship that we have with Krishna and Krishna's creation. Abhideya means the process of how to connect to Krishna. Prayojana means the goal, which is love of Godhead. So here it is explaining the Abhideya. Abhideya means
how to
connect to Krishna. Process. Bhakti-aman abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. Krishna says himself in the Bhagavad Gita, only by bhakti can I be known. Right? If you don't have pure devotional service, you cannot understand Krishna. If you don't render devotional service, you can't understand it. Whether it's mixed with karma or mixed with jnana, you can't understand Krishna. You see, many people these days, they're attracted, just like on the weekend we had yogis at our farm, Hare Krishna Valley. They do a retreat. But they're all mixed. And bhakti, yes, you could say it's like some semblance of bhakti, is there? It's mixed with jnana. Jnana means?
Knowledge.
Yeah, and quite often their knowledge is imperfect. So they don't have proper bhakti. You guys have to work out your lives so we can quieten down. So if it's mixed with karma means material desires, or jnana, which means an improper conclusion, then your bhakti becomes weakened, right? It's not pure devotional service. Pure devotional service means it has to be free from karma. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma jnafritam. It has to be free from material desires and imperfect understandings. If it is, then your bhakti can carry you to Krishna. So here it is saying this is the process. It's like an Upanishadic gift or treasure or explanation, which is the Upanishad is saying this is the way to come to Krishna, simplifying everything. Right? If you understand this, you don't need to go through all the Vedic literatures. That's why Srimad Bhagavatam is sufficient. Just study Srimad Bhagavatam, you don't need anything else. Everything is in Srimad Bhagavatam. All knowledge. Perfect explanation of Sambandha, perfect explanation of Abhideya, and perfectly Prema, or Prayojana is explained. So everything is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Any points?
So in other words, the Jnana is really dry knowledge. It's not very devotional. Jnana means you should have the
Yeah, the knowledge we get from the Bhagavatam, but not a different type of knowledge. Please don't mix your knowledge. Any other point?
Same thing is written in Bhagavad Gita, Bhavana Janalam, Jnana Van Mahaprabhu. After billions of lives, if you go through all the sufferings and everything that Vasudeva said,
good. Anything else? So you should read all these purports, and you should read this chapter of the Krishna book. You have to do that in your own time, because I was saying to my wife on the way up here in the car, it may be the most purported chapter of the entire Bhagavata. But if you count all the length of the purports, the pages, it may be the thickest chapter in the whole Bhagavata. I'm not sure, but it's a very detailed explanation, but you have to read that yourself. I can't go through everything here. The mind is like an impetuous horse, that even persons who have regulated their senses and breath cannot control. Those in this world who try to tame the uncontrolled mind, but who abandon the feet of their spiritual master, encounter hundreds of obstacles in their cultivation of various distressful practices. O unborn Lord, they are like merchants on a boat in the ocean who have failed to employ a helmsman. It's a very important instruction, which is given in this particular verse. Does anyone have problems with their mind, controlling their mind in devotional service? No? Okay, now we have three people put their hands up. No one has a good problem with their mind?
No problem.
Now everyone starts going.
The mind is too much struggle.
Yeah, but I asked the question, anyone have a problem? No one put their hand up. Right? Now, then I ask again, and everyone's, oh, wait a minute.
It was mind that was
giving
the problem. This is well.
What can I do? 15 years and we still can't get an answer. So, the mind is very difficult to control. Krishna says in the Gita, it is like trying to control the wind. Very difficult to control the wind. Right? And here it says the mind is like a horse. Is it easy to control a horse? No. If the horse is strong and wild, you try to control it. Very difficult. Right? So that's what the mind is like. Try to control is like trying to control the wind. Or the horse, very powerful. So, the Upanishads, they recognize this. Bhagavad Gita says, hard to control the mind. Upanishads say, hard to control the mind. But then they give the answer very quickly. Because everyone said they have a problem with their mind. So then how do you control your mind? Yes, but what does it say in this verse? It says, those in this world who try to tame the uncontrolled mind, but who abandon the feet of the spiritual master, encounter hundreds of obstacles in their cultivation of various distressful practices. So there is the secret. Yeah, you have to control the mind by following the instructions of the spiritual master. Then the mind becomes controlled. Otherwise, very difficult to control the mind. Now, devotees have trouble following the instructions of the spiritual master. Is that a fair statement? Is it accurate? Okay. So why is that? Bhagavatam says, you want to control the mind, follow the instructions of the guru, and you find that difficult. So how do we overcome the mind? What does it take? What principle is necessary in following the guru's instructions? Right. It says, Sri Guru Narottama Das Thakur says, right, we chant every morning at Guru Puja, Sri Guru Charane Rati. Rati means?
Attachment.
You have to become attached to your spiritual master and his instructions. The problem is we're not sufficiently attached to the instructions or to the guru himself. We are attached, there's no doubt. There are attachments there, but the attachment is not sufficient. Because if it was stronger, then we could easily follow his instructions. And then the mind would not give you any problem. When does the mind give you problem? When you forget the instructions of the guru. How do you forget the instructions of the guru? When you're not doing sufficient hearing and chanting. Then you forget instructions. And then you're left with the mind. Therefore, when we get up in the morning, we absorb ourselves in hearing and chanting. Right? Spiritual sound vibration. And that purifies the consciousness, lifts us above the mind. Otherwise, you see, so many devotees, they struggle with their mind. Yeah, because they're not absorbed. So this is the secret. Yeah? We have to become attached to the guru. It means rati. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Korya Aikya. Aikya means?
One.
Eka means one. Right? Make the instructions of the spiritual master one with your mind. That's what Narottama Das Thakur says. Every morning we sing that song. Do you know what the song actually means? Do you meditate on the meaning of the song? You can sing the Sanskrit, that's nice, but you have to meditate on the meaning. What is the meaning? Make the instruction of the guru one with your mind. That is what Narottama Das Thakur teaches us. Do we do that? Sometimes, to some degree, but not fully. Therefore, the mind gives you problems. Enjoy yourself in the material world. Any points?
You have a piece of answer that people say in the institute, say that if you teach your head, you choose. 100 times
early morning. He said hit the mind, yeah. Not your head.
Mine is in the head.
Mine is in the head, but don't hit your head. Any other point? Okay. Please don't hit your head. To those persons who take shelter of you, you reveal yourself as the super soul, the embodiment of all transcendental pleasure. What further use have such devotees for their servants, children, or bodies, their wives, money, or houses, their land, good health, or conveyances? And for those who fail to appreciate the truth about you and go on pursuing the pleasures of sex, what could there be in this entire world? A place inherently doomed to destruction and devoid of significance that could give them real happiness. That was a beautiful verse. That was beautiful. Okay, so read the first paragraph. Jogi, you'll have to read that.
Devotional service to Lord Vishnu is considered pure. And one's soul desires to please the Lord. Situated in the perfect consciousness of Vaishnava, has no interest in worldly gains and is excused from any obligation to perform ritual sacrifices and follow austere practices of yoga. As Indaka Upanishad states, when a Brahmana recognizes that elevation to the heavenly planets is merely another accumulation of karma, he becomes renounced and is no longer corrupted by his actions. Perhaps Arishaka 4.4.9 and Katha Upanishads confirm, when a person completely gives up all of his sinful desires, he is harboring in his heart, he exchanges mortality for eternal spiritual life and attains real pleasure in the actual truth. And the Gopalatapan Upanishad, over 1.5, concludes, devotional service is the process of worshipping the Supreme Lord. It consists of fixing one's mind upon Him by becoming disinterested in all the material designations, both in this life and the next. This indeed is true renunciation.
Very good. So what are the points?
We should develop pure consciousness, pure happy, pure Vishnu. and we should not think about anything else.
That is nice. That is nice. What else is there?
Give up all sinful desires.
Give up all sinful desires. What does the very first verse of the Bhagavad Gita say? Canto 1, Chapter 1, Verse 1. The Bhagavad Gita is meant to make us distinguish between reality and illusion. Right? The very first verse says, that is one of the main purposes of Bhagavad Gita. Right? You study Bhagavad Gita, you can distinguish between reality and illusion. What is real, what is false. That's why we study Bhagavad Gita. And we should develop that ability. It's called Shastra Chakshus. Shastra Chakshus means?
Seeing the eyes of the Shastra.
What's that?
Seeing the eyes of the Shastra.
Yeah. Seeing through the eyes of Shastra. We should be able to see as the Bhagavad Gita is seen. Which means we can understand what is real and what is not real. Now, we all understand this material world is false. It says in the second canto of the Bhagavad Gita, this world is swapna. Swapna means it's a dream. Right? You're just dreaming. It is not real. You think it is real, but it is just a dream. The soul is not actually experiencing these things. It is the mind, the intelligence, the ego that experiences the body. Right? So it is swapna. It is not reality. Right? Now, how do we move beyond our attachment? Because we understand theoretically, and Prabhupada says it is wanted and it is good, that theoretically we understand this world is temporary and full of suffering. That is good. But how do we move beyond the theoretical understanding to the realized understanding? Yeah, by application. And what will lift us above? Param jishtvani vatite. You have to get a higher pleasure from Krishna consciousness. When you get that bliss of Krishna consciousness, it lifts you above. But devotees have to absorb themselves in that bliss and stay connected to it. Fully surrender to Krishna. You hear sometimes Prabhupada says on his lectures, he says, fully surrender. Right? Fully surrender. Give everything to Krishna. That is the way that you rise above attachment. Otherwise, you'll be absorbed in the dream of the material world. You won't understand that it is illusion. You have to become fully surrendered, fully absorb yourself in Krishna's service. And through that higher taste, it lifts you out of the material world. And then you don't even know the material world is there. Any points?
That means just to please Krishna. All the things we do, just to please him.
Yeah. This is called sannyas. Sannyas means everything you do, your body, your mind, your words, is for the pleasure of Shri Krishna Chandra Bhagwan Ki. Shri Krishna Jamashtami Ki. Only 1 month, isn't it? So it must be 1 month. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. 1 month. Any points?
Actually, in one sense, the material world is so, people are looking at getting very tangible. Which means, if you work hard, you make money. If you, have a good family. The spiritual life is more tangible sort of benefit to the materialist. And when we talk about getting a higher sort of taste, this is something unheard of for a lot of people, even devotees for that, in one sense. And that's why they are not giving the 104%.
Part of the problem is when devotees join, they join as grihasthas. Because if you join as a brahmachari, like I did, you know, not that it makes me special or superior or better or anything, but I saw the benefit of the circumstance. Because when you're Brahmachari, Brahmachari, you have nothing else to do. Just serve Krishna. And you fully absorb yourself. And when someone comes as a Grihastha, it means, I remember my Guru Maharaj said that on one lecture, you have to work extra hard to embody and to imbibe that mood of full surrender to Krishna. You really have to push yourself to surrender. But we have to learn that mood of full surrender. So then we have to look at Grihastha examples of full surrender. Like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was married, but like fully surrendered. Then you have to become like Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
Also, basically, I started halfway through our lives getting the Krishna consciousness. Yeah. And then now we sort of like going, you know, just after being like 20, 23 years now, we just starting to get the taste of Srila Bhaktivinoda, sort of like a little bit. Every now and then, that itself is sort of like a struggle while balancing everything else.
So, probably the best thing to do is just take something else. When Buddha's married. Okay. I was joking for you. Don't chastise me later because I was joking. So Bhagavatam says, the verse we just read, what do we have to give up? What attachments do we have to give up?
Everything.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's just... But when we break everything down, what do we have to give up? We have to give up attachment to servants, children, our bodies, our wives or husbands, our money, our houses, our land, good health and conveyances. So Bhagavatam gave a very comprehensive list. Yeah. Because it's easy to serve Krishna when your health is good, but when your health is not good, is it easy? It becomes a struggle. So you have to be as devoted to Krishna even when your health is not good. That's not so easy. You will see, you're just young. But when things begin to collapse, it becomes difficult. I know,
it is difficult.
I'm 67 this year. Vegetarian, so. Okay, joking. 63.
But as our devotion starts increasing, the Lord gives
us strength. Yeah. Prabhupada makes that point. Prabhupada says, as you become older, you become more enthusiastic. Huh? Like you saw Prabhupada, enthusiasm is getting more and more and more to serve Krishna. Because the soul cannot be limited by material circumstances. Okay.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur has a closet in his house. Small closet. Mm. You should sit there and...
Mm. You've seen the closet?
No, no.
Where did you find out about the closet?
There was some... somebody was giving a lecture. I went to the lecture.
Nice. Do you go to Mayapur sometimes?
Yeah.
Okay. If you go across to Godrumdri and you go back to Thakur's house, you can see the place. I will pray for you next time I am there.
For me too.
I'm not praying for everyone. You always have to jump in. I said Mahatma Prabhu.
I requested you.
Oh, Krishna. I haven't got unlimited prayers, you know.
You have to take two names then.
Oh, God. So, okay. So pray for me that I can get there, and then if I get there, then I'll pray for you at that place and your wife.
Oh, that's a good person.
Otherwise, I will be in trouble.
You won't be in trouble.
I'm always in trouble with you. Sages free from false ego live on this earth by frequenting the sacred pilgrimage sites and those places where the Supreme Lord displayed his pastimes. Because such devotees keep your lotus feet within their hearts, the water that washes their feet destroys all sins. Anyone who even once turns his mind toward you, the ever blissful soul of all existence, no longer dedicates himself to serving family life at home, which simply robs a man of his good qualities. So Bhagavatam is saying, don't get absorbed in family life. If you do, you are called Griha Medhi. What is Griha Medhi? Medhi means, you know, like in the old days, the bulls, they used to tie them to the log, and in the middle there was the grinding stone. That's called the Medhi. And then, the bull goes around and crushes the grains. You know that? That center piece is called the Medhi. So Griha Medhi means your home is the center. My wife is my life. Huh? Or, my kids or whatever you say like that. Tonight I have to be careful. Normally you're not here, so you're not here, I'm going to say. But tonight I have to be like it. Okay. So, my Shiksha Guru is here.
Only one deep realized class. Deep realized classes.
Yeah. So it means the Medhi is the center. So we should not be like that. Right? That is not the center of the life. Yeah, we should be Grihastha. Grihastha Ashraya. Grihastha Ashram. Ashraya means Krishna is in the center, the deity is in the center. Right? And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you look after the wife, the husband, and the children as Krishna's servants. That's the mentality. Right? Then it becomes spiritual. Otherwise, material.
You could share it with us. Bhaktivinoda Thakur thinks, whatever we have heard, all news.
Yeah. Everything belongs to you, Krishna. So it says that the devotees who make the holy dham, they're the center of their existence, then their feet become a place of pilgrimage. So devotees are attached to the holy dham, then we worship their feet. And then we pray to also get that attachment. It may be proposed that this world is permanently real because it is generated from the permanent reality. But such an argument is subject to logical refutation. Sometimes, indeed, the apparent non-difference of a cause and its effect fails to prove true. And at other times, the product of something real is illusory. Furthermore, this world cannot be permanently real, for it partakes of the natures of not only the absolute reality, but also the illusion disguising that reality. Actually, the visible forms of this world are just an imaginary arrangement, resorted to by a succession of ignorant persons in order to facilitate their material affairs, with their various meanings and implications. The learned words of your Vedas bewilder all persons whose minds have been dulled by hearing the incantations of sacrificial rituals. So once again, the Vedas speak of many subject matters, right? What are the three sections of the Vedas? Yeah, there is Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Upasana Kanda. Right? So there are different sections of the Vedas. So we should not become bewildered by the parts of the Vedas which emphasize material acquisition or material improvement, advancement. why are the Vedas purifying? Because even the portions which speak about worshipping or becoming rich or getting a beautiful wife or having a good son, they still instruct us to worship particular demigods. So what does that instill in us? It instills in us respect for higher power. So one time they asked Prabhupada, they said, who is better, someone who worships demigods in the Vedic culture or a Christian who worships God? Prabhupada said, the person who worships the demigods in the Vedic culture. Because in the Vedic culture, everything heads towards worshipping the superior. And gradually it elevates you, gradually. Right? And it instills in you a very strong culture. So that eventually, if you come in contact with a devotee, the devotee will say, well, worshipping the demigod is not the goal. The goal is to worship the Supreme Person. Right? And there is a specific knowledge of how to worship that Supreme Person. In Christianity, although they worship God, it is watered down in such a way that usually most people, they present it as sense enjoyment. Worship God, but for sense gratification, which is what the demigod worshippers are doing. Just like many years ago, I used to go and sell books in Burwood, which is one of the suburbs out there. And there was one church, and they had a big sign out the front. You know, many churches had the sign, like the one just over in the corner. And they put their different saying for the week. This one's pretty good, actually. The one just here. Like, half the time, the really good ones. The other half a bit hit and miss, but half the time, really nice sayings. So this this church in Burwood, I was going past, a big sign. The sign said, had a picture of a man in a hammock drinking like a beer or something. And the sign said, enjoy your holidays. God has given them to you. It's got nothing to do with God really at all. You know, a man in a hammock and, you know, like, oh, God has given you that. No, that's not, Bhagavatam is not teaching that. Where in the Bhagavatam it says, go and lie in the hammock. These things, the material enjoyment. Bhagavatam does not emphasize. That's why Bhagavatam is superior. Because Bhagavatam emphasizes full surrender to Krishna. It doesn't emphasize anything else. Bhagavatam doesn't even emphasize partial surrender to Krishna. Full surrender. And Bhagavatam goes so far to exalt the gopis as the highest devotees. And Srimati Radharani is superior to all. This is what the Bhagavatam is teaching. It doesn't teach material things. If you want material things, you go somewhere else. You go to church. If you want material things. Or go to the Buddhist temple. But if you come here, you'll get the pure message, love of God. And it's important you hear from the right devotees, the devotees who will give you the pure message. Right? For the Bhagavatam to be potent, then the speaker has to be fully surrendered themselves. Right? The more surrendered the speaker, the more powerful the message becomes. Just like Prabhupada, he's the most surrendered, so the message had the most power. Any point? Upasana kind of means about like the technicalities of how to worship.
Deity worship.
Yeah, like deity worship.
But they are not teaching the pure.
Yeah, the pure part is the Bhagavatam.
That's beyond this
thing. Yeah. Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj, she can explain it all.
Actually, Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj was saying the Vedas, 96% is all Kavananda. Up to 96%. been to, but that's what you were saying. It's all about, you know, if I worship this, you'll get this, you worship this, just to elevate.
We are not interested in that.
So why is this chapter most important?
Why is this chapter most important? Because
yeah.
It's the essential structure, instructions of the Vedas.
But the Vedas don't teach them.
No, these are the Upanishads. The Upanishads are not part of the four Vedas. The Upanishads are separate.
Uh-huh.
So the 28 principal Upanishads are giving their purport. They're just giving you, yeah, the essence. Bhagavatam gives you the essence. It doesn't. It is Veda Sara. Veda Sara means the essence of the Vedas. We haven't got time. You know, just tell me the essence. We don't want to hear all the... Just get to the point. My Guru Maharaj used to say to me, get to the point.
So, the Upanishads are giving the essence.
Yeah, philosophical.
So that will develop the
bhakti. This chapter will develop the bhakti.
Okay.
You only have to study this chapter. You don't have to study all the Upanishads.
Okay?
Okay. Make sure you read this chapter.
Okay.
Huh?
Thank you.
Okay? And
but
pray.
And
pray for your husband.
Yeah.
Okay. Since this universe did not exist prior to its creation and will no longer exist after its annihilation, we conclude that in the interim, it is nothing more than a manifestation imagined to be visible within you, whose spiritual enjoyment never changes. We liken this universe to the transformation of various material substances into diverse forms. Certainly those who believe that this figment of the imagination is substantially real are less intelligent. So the example has already been given. This material world is like clay. Why is it like clay? Because from clay you can make so many forms, right? You can make pots or vases, so many different things. But then it all, the form comes, stays for some time and then goes back and then in the end you just get clay again. So the material world is like that, right? The forms appear for some time, but then gone. Your body appears, gone. As sure as death. That's the nature of the material. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us this. Understand, it's all temporary. It's there now, but it won't last. The illusory material nature attracts the minute living entity to embrace her. And as a result, he assumes forms composed of her qualities. Subsequently, he loses all his spiritual qualities and must undergo repeated deaths. You, however, avoid the material energy in the same way that a snake abandons its old skin. Glorious in your possession of eight mystic perfections, you enjoy unlimited opulences. So what is the difference between us and Krishna? Right? If Krishna comes to the material world, he is unaffected. If we come to the material world, we are affected. Are you affected by the material energy? Are you affected by the material energy right now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're all affected by the material energy. But when Krishna comes, he's not affected. But when we come, we are called Tatashta Shakti. Tatashta means? Sometimes unaffected, sometimes affected. Krishna is always unaffected, but we are not. Sometimes you're in Maya, sometimes you're not in Maya. Prabhupada said you're always in Maya. And then he walked off. If you want to get out of Maya, you have to catch up to Prabhupada. Pankajangari Prabhu, you know Pankajangari Prabhu? in Mayapur, my Shiksha Guru, one of the famous devotees in this world, him and Janani Vaspur. He said he had a dream with Prabhupada. He was walking with Prabhupada. And devotees were walking, but devotees were behind, and he was next to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was walking, Prabhupada said, "Can you see?" And Prabhupada was meaning the spiritual world. He said, "Can you see?" And Jaran Prabhu said, he said, "No, Prabhupada, I cannot see." And Prabhupada said, "Oh." And I think Prabhupada might have said, "It will take some time." But the point is, if we stay with Prabhupada, then we will get to the goal. Eventually we have to catch up. Walk with Prabhupada, then Prabhupada will say, "Do you see?" And then we will see it. But at the moment, we cannot see. Why? Because you're attached to the material world. So you cannot see.
We make so many in the Bible today. She's so shy that she doesn't even think the name.
The what?
The material world is so shy.
Durga, yeah.
That she doesn't even show her face with.
To Krishna, yeah.
Relating on Testament.
Yeah. That's the quality of a chaste woman. Well, she will hide her face. Members of the renounced order who fail to uproot the last traces of material desire in their hearts remain impure, and thus you do not allow them to understand you, although you are present within their hearts. For them you are like a jewel worn around the neck of a man who has totally forgotten it is there. O Lord, those who practice yoga only for sense gratification must suffer punishment both in this life and the next, from death, who will release them, and from you, whose kingdom they cannot reach. So these are nice instructions for those in the renounced order of life. If you take to the renounced order of life, you have to be free from material desires. Mostly. It doesn't mean 100%, but it means mostly. The reason all of us are grihasthas is we are not mostly bereft of material desires. We're still very materialistic in consciousness. So you have to become gradually purified. It is a lifetime endeavor. My Guru Maharaj said to me, he said, just stick at it and eventually you will attain it. So you have to be prepared to stay your whole life. How long have you been prepared to stay your whole life in ISKCON? Good. How much of your hands up if you're prepared to become more serious in your Krishna consciousness each year?
I do.
Huh?
Trying.
You better be trying. Well, you have to become more serious, not less serious. Right. How many senior devotees are there around in our temple, in our community? Not so many. Why? Because people become less serious. You want to become more serious. Then you will stay. That's how you stay enthused in devotional service. Each year you become more serious, more committed. Give up more material desires. Then you will stay. Otherwise you will fall back. And you'll just come once a year to the temple for Janmashtami with your moustache and your seven kids. Hare Krishna. We'll say, yeah, we remember him. Now he thinks he is Arjuna. When a person realizes you, he no longer cares about his good and bad fortune arising from past pious and sinful acts, since it is you alone who control this good and bad fortune. Such a realized devotee also disregards what ordinary living beings say about him. Every day he fills his ears with your glories, which are recited in each age by the unbroken succession of Manu's descendants, and thus you become his ultimate salvation. So this is a very instructive verse also. When a person realizes you, he no longer cares about good and bad fortune arising from past pious and sinful acts. What does that mean? What is it? Yeah, you should take the good and the bad. Yeah, that's good. Same way. Good and bad, you take it the same.
Yes. It's not God, it's our previous God.
Very good. What else is that? Sees everything equally. Yeah. So this is one way that we know that we are advancing. Right? We don't blame Krishna or others for our karma. It's not easy, actually, to do that. Yeah, I'm not on that platform where I just never blame anyone for my karma. Sometimes in my mind I think, if it wasn't for that person, I wouldn't be like this. Right? Sometimes think like that. But when you're very advanced, you just think, no, this is all just coming from karma. Good or bad, you know, life is good, serve Krishna. Life is bad, serve Krishna. What's the difference? That's the ultimate consciousness that we're trying to attain. And it says here that we are not, it says they disregard what ordinary living beings say about us. Right? Devotees have to learn not to be affected by what ordinary people say about us. You can't be affected. Your family will say so many things. Right? But you don't allow them to govern your life. Your life is governed by Guru and Krishna. They'll say whatever they say. Right? Friends will say, so many people will say, everyone will say. Everyone wants to say something. In Kali Yuga, people can't keep their mouths shut. They want to tell you everything all the time. So thank you very much, but I'm just going to serve Krishna. Huh? You want to find me? You know where you'll find me? Huh? If I ever go missing, you know where I'll be? Where will I be?
In the farm.
In the farm. I'm not going to be at the farm. Where will I be? If you can't find me, where would I be? Yeah, I probably would, actually. I was thinking somewhere else, but... But yeah, if I had to, yeah, I'd be in Vrindavan. Or Godroom Dweep. You can't find me, I'll probably be there. Next to Bhaktivinoda Thakur Samadhi chanting. You come and find me. I'll be the guy with the beard. Chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the mosquitoes.
I was making you scan, but I will not leave Mark. No, I will have to take Chaitanya Charitamrita afterwards. You have to take Chaitanya Charitamrita.
She knows I won't take sannyas. She knows I won't take sannyas. Because if I try to take sannyas, she will beat me. So it is not possible. When a person realizes you, he no longer cares about his good and bad fortune. I just read that last. Because you are unlimited, neither the lords of heaven nor even you yourself can ever reach the end of your glories. The countless universes, each enveloped in its shell, are compelled by the will of time to wander within you, like particles of dust blowing about in the sky. The Shrutis, following their method of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme, become successful by revealing you as their final conclusion. the final conclusion of the Vedas, the end of the Vedas, that is called Vedanta. Anta means the end. Veda means knowledge. What is the end of knowledge? Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord, Sri Narayan Rishi, said, having heard these instructions about the Supreme Self, the personality of Godhead, the son of Brahma now understood their final destination. They felt perfectly satisfied and honored Sanandana with their worship. Thus the ancient saints who traveled in the upper heavens distilled this nectarian and confidential essence of all the Vedas and Puranas. And as you wander the earth at will, my dear son of Brahma, you should faithfully meditate on these instructions concerning the science of the self, which burn up the material desires of all men. So what was the original question in this chapter? This chapter began with a question. What was the question?
The question was, the Lord is so great. And,
no, what's the question? What was the question in the very beginning of the chapter?
How we can understand this material senses.
Yeah. Can you understand Krishna through material senses and material sound? What is the answer?
Yes.
Yes. Because all of this sound that we've heard in this chapter with our material senses, we can understand God. Because that sound has been purified because it is about Krishna. So when you hear it, it purifies you. And it allows you to understand Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami said, when Narayan, Sri Narayan Rishi, ordered him in this way, the self-possessed sage Narada, whose vow is as heroic as a warrior's, accepted the command with full faith. Now, successful in all his purposes, he thought about what he had heard, O King, and replied to the Lord as follows. So he was described to be like, how does the verse describe him? Did anyone just read the verse that we just read? Huh? What? Like a warrior. Huh? Hands up if you're a warrior. If you're not a warrior, you won't go back to Krishna. Prabhupada says, when you join ISKCON, you declare war on the material energy. War means it's a fight. If you're not in this warrior spirit, Prabhupada was a general. You know, my Guru Maharaj, I heard him say that. Prabhupada was a general. Lord Chaitanya said, more Senapati Bhakta. He is a general, commander in chief. Right? If you're not in that spirit, you will never go back to Krishna. Because the material world is going to throw everything at you. And you have to go straight through it, unstoppable. If you're not like that, you won't go back to Krishna. Prabhupada was like that. He just went straight through everything. Thus, the ancient saints who traveled in the upper... Did I read that? Yeah. Shukadeva Goswami said... When Sri Narayan Rishi ordered him in this way, the self-possessed sage Narada, whose vow is as heroic... I just read that as well. Where's Sri Chaitanya? Sri Chaitanya is the only one who tells me. He says you read that. Sri Narada said, I offer my obeisances to him of spotless fame, the Supreme Lord Krishna, who manifests his all-attractive personal expansions so that all living beings can achieve liberation. Shukadeva Goswami continued, after saying this, Narada bowed down to Sri Narayan Rishi, the foremost of sages, and also to his saintly disciples. He then returned to the hermitage of my father, Dwapayan Vyas. Vyasadeva, the incarnation of the personality of Godhead respectfully greeted Narad Muni and offered him a seat, which he accepted. Narada then described to Vyas what he had heard from the mouth of Sri Narayan Rishi. Thus I have replied to the question you asked me, O King, concerning how the mind can have access to the absolute truth, which is indescribable by material worlds and devoid of material qualities. He is the Lord who eternally watches over this universe, who exists before, during, and after its manifestation. He is the master of both the unmanifest material energy and the spirit soul. After sending forth the creation, he enters within it, accompanying each living entity. There he creates the material bodies and then remains as their regulator. By surrendering to him, one can escape the embrace of illusion, just as a dreaming person forgets his own body. One who wants liberation from fear should constantly meditate upon him, Lord Hari, who is always on the platform of perfection and thus never subject to material birth. So in the purport, it is explained that we will only understand Krishna when we associate with devotees who have become liberated themselves by understanding Krishna. That is disciplic succession. What is the guru's qualification? He understands Krishna. What is our qualification? We are following him. Then, if we also understand Krishna, then others can take shelter, and that's how it continues, perpetually. Srila Prabhupada ki.